This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Scientists have set their sights on finding a cure for AIDS. At the opening of the International AIDS Society conference in Vancouver last week, AIDS researchers made a call to action for a worldwide shift in HIV treatment. They now suggest that doctors provide medication immediately after a diagnosis instead of waiting for the first signs of the illness to appear. Dr. David Margolis is an AIDS researcher and professor of medicine at UNC Chapel Hill. He attended the conference and joins us on the line now. David Margolis, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell us about this change in protocol. I mean, I guess I was surprised to see that the old protocol was to wait for first signs. I would think with a fatal disease, you'd want to get started as soon as possible. Tell us about this change.
Well, I guess you would think that, but that's actually really not been the history of HIV therapy for quite some time, mostly related to the toxicities of the old medications, most of which are no longer used, and the cost of medications in administering chronic care, and also to many other, you know, social implications of being identified as HIV positive and being on treatment. But obviously, the conclusion that you drew is the correct one. And I think you started off the show by mentioning work towards a cure of HIV someday in the future. But actually, this conference and this announcement sort of shows that coping with the HIV pandemic across the world requires sort of attention to every aspect of the virus and the epidemic. So the reason that this change came about is really comes from a study that I'm happy to say was led by my boss, Mike Cohen, at UNC Chapel Hill. This study was called HPTN-052, and its initial results were announced several years ago, about 2 years ago, I think, and it was sort of deemed the breakthrough of the year by Science Magazine at the time. But what was announced at the international conference this week was really the final data analysis of all the results from the HPTN-052 study. And let me just explain for a second what that was. So the idea was that if you treated infected people, they were interested in finding out not so much about what the effective treatment was on the infected person, but on what the effective treatment was on their uninfected partner. And the final results of the study essentially showed in a very convincing way that not only did treatment at any stage of disease prevent spread of the infection among partners, but it also markedly improved the health of the HIV-infected person, even in the earliest stage of disease, even recently after infection. And so it really removed all hesitation for the need for finding people with HIV infection and getting them into treatment, you know, as you say, as soon as possible.
So you have, yes, those remarkable results that it also stops the transmission of AIDS, or at least it limits the transmission the sooner you get started. And also, I suppose, part of that is, along with this research that shows sort of conclusively the effects not only on the patient but on the transmission, at the same time there are improvements in the AIDS drugs themselves. Is that right?
Yes, those have been going on for some time and really are perhaps reaching, you know, sort of the nearly perfect state. I'm sure there can always be improvements, but I'm not sure that they'll be of any great magnitude over the array of treatments that we have now.
And we're talking about someday finding a cure for AIDS. There was a fair amount of excitement at the conference about what potentially might be a sign of a cure in a 14-year-old girl. Tell us about that.
Well, this was not really a cure. So this was another impact of very early treatment. This was a young person who had been treated since the first weeks of life, not exceptionally early, but pretty early, and treated for a number of years. And then for various reasons, treatment was stopped. But when treatment was stopped, the young person's immune system appears to really be controlling infection. And so this is a phenomenon called post-treatment control This was sort of first brought to light a couple of years ago by a study in adults in France, where a large number of people, several hundred, were treated within the first few weeks or months of infection. And they were treated, this wasn't really an organized study, it was more of an observational one. They were on treatment for sort of the usual course several years, in the usual way at the time, and many of them decided to stop therapy. Most of the patients that stopped therapy, virus came back within a few weeks and disease progressed, as is usually the case. But in slightly over more than a dozen of them, they entered this sort of post-treatment controller state for reasons that are still not understood. And so this is actually the first sort of observation of the same sort of phenomena happening in a person who was treated early in life.
So,
and so it just tells us that if we can understand how this phenomena works and if we can develop tools that recreate this phenomena more reliably in everyone, then perhaps we would be able to have put people on antiretroviral therapy, administer some sort of other therapy or immunomodulatory treatment to alter the immune system, and then those people could control virus without therapy. We don't know a lot of things. We don't know if that's really better for the patients than being on therapy, because there's certainly evidence that these sorts of people that control infection on their own, it is a tax on their immune systems to chronically be fighting against the virus.
Right.
So in the long term, it's not clear, you know, if you were to ask me which would I prefer, to be a post-treatment controller or to be just suppressed on one pill once a day. Mm-hmm. I personally would pick one pill once a day at this point.
Well, it does sound like that if you're using your own immune system, as you said, you're still quite vulnerable, because if you then employed your immune system to fight off another infection, there you go.
And this story worries me a little bit, because it sort of is reported in a very simple way.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that people will think that, well, maybe I can just stop my treatment and I'll be cured. And that's really not the message.
Well, it has to be complex, because, of course, the hell of AIDS is that it employs your own immune system. So then to suggest that somehow the immune system, your own immune system, is effective against it, does suggest a real change. Somehow, your own system is working in a way that's different than it had been.
Yeah,
just in my own intuition would tell me that.
Certainly, a very interesting case, and we probably have a lot to learn from it. But it is quite unusual for this to happen when people stop therapy.
Let me ask you about something else. Earlier this year, GlaxoSmithKline and UNC Chapel Hill announced a joint partnership aimed at eliminating AIDS. Tell us about the partnership.
Well, I guess I know a lot about that because I'm the leader of the UNC half of it. So this is a discussion that's been going on across the community more broadly, but specifically between GSK and UNC for some time. There are a lot of challenges to HIV research and to drug development, both on the academic side and the industry side. And the challenges are different. But I think everyone is looking for sort of new and better ways to get things done, specifically in this area of trying to find strategies that could cure HIV infection or allow post-treatment control like we were just talking about. The challenge is that the science is really very difficult and the task is very daunting, and this will require really a lot of investment over a long period of time. Those sorts of investments are very difficult for drug companies to make, because they have to tell their shareholders that they'll have a drug product to bring to market relatively soon. They're also difficult for academics to work on, because some of these issues are really translational drug development issues that are, those skills are really in industry, not necessarily in academia. So it, over the last couple of years, it's opened up an idea of different ways to do partnerships. I think the first kind of partnership was started by the NIH, where they developed a program called the Martin Delaney Collaboratories. This is a NIH-funded group that has an industry partner. We actually have one of those collaboratories at Chapel Hill called CARE. This newer partnership between GSK and UNC is sort of the opposite side of that coin, where a single industry entity and an academic entity go into a full partnership where this virtual company is owned 50-50 by both partners. And the idea is to try to co-localize the research on the UNC campus and physically bring industry and experts to UNC to work together with UNC scientists to develop these sorts of treatments for the future. It's a long-term plan. We have an initial five-year plan, but we're hoping to extend this for probably the couple of decades that it will need to solve the problem.
We will keep checking in with you. David Margolis, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Dr. David Margolis is an AIDS researcher and professor of medicine at UNC Chapel Hill. He leads a collaboratory of AIDS researcher eradication known as CARE. Just ahead, a former military and government official gives us an inside look into counterterrorism in his new novel. Stay tuned to The State of Things on North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.